Oregon Secretary of State. And I just want to introduce my deputy to you that many of you probably know. Gene has a long career in the Secretary of State's office, has seen it from many, many different angles. She started as she first started as a budget officer for the Portland Development Commission a long time ago, but she's since she came to us in 1997 and was a budget officer, and then moved to being director of the Business Services Division, and then in 2003 she was appointed director of our Information Services Division, which has lots of projects going. She became my deputy in January of this year, and I'm very pleased to have her working with me, because I got to say, there is really nobody who knows this agency better than Gene Strait. So.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Yes, good morning. For the record, I'm Gene Strait, and I'm the Deputy Secretary of State. And I'm here to go over our last four divisions with you. The first one being our executive office. The services that the executive office provides are policy direction, general oversight of the work of the divisions, coordination among the divisions, and then managing external contact, including relations with our governments, with other governments, other agencies of state government, the legislature, the media, and our constituents. It also includes statutory functions that are not assigned to any division. External customers of the division would be agency employees. Okay. Agency employees, the general public, elected officials, government agencies, the business community, the media, and academics. The budget request for the executive office is pretty straightforward. It's just base budget. We're not asking for any program option packages or anything like that. So that's our executive office. The next three divisions that I'm going to talk to you about are our three internal support divisions: Human Resources Division, Business Services Division, and Information Systems. The customers of these three divisions include all of the agency's employees, and then external customers would include members of the public seeking employment, individuals or organizations seeking employment verification on current employees, employers seeking employment references, union representatives, other state agencies, counties, municipalities, the general public, financial institutions, and vendors and contractors. So now I'm going to talk about Human Resources Division. As you can probably tell, what they do is they do our recruitments, they write our HR policies, they schedule and manage our training that we need to have. So those are the things that our Human Resources Division does. Budget drivers for our Human Resources Division would be changes in legislation, both state and federal, which this requires modifications to our policies and our procedures. Employee turnover is a budget driver. It increases the recruitments that we have to do. It also includes, they handle all dismissals, layoffs, all of that type of activities. And then reorganizations in the agencies can drive their budget. The division has two performance measures. One is a key performance measure, number 12. And this is the strategy is to create work environment and employment opportunities to attract and retain diverse and skilled workers. The first one is for affirmative action statistics for women. And our targets, as you can see in the presentation, I don't remember what page it starts on our presentation, but
68.
Okay, thank you. Our targets are set to gradually increase over the next biennium with a 62% for the 07-09 target. Our numbers show that we have stayed fairly consistent. In 2001-03, we were at 59%, and then in the first year of 2005-06, we were still at 59%. So, and this is comparable to the rest of Oregon state government, which is at about 53% for the 05-06. The next statistic is for people of color, and our targets start are set to gradually increase as well, with a 12% target for the 2007-09 biennium. We have stayed fairly consistent in this as well, with a slight increase to what we had at 10% for the 2005-09. We're slightly behind the rest of state government, which is at 12%. And then the next statistic is for persons with disabilities. And our targets are set for 5% for the 07-09 biennium. And we have stayed at 3% for the last few years. And this is right on, this is exactly what the rest of state government is right now. So some things that can affect this is agency turnover, applicant pool of the vacant positions, and a growing economy. The growing economy kind of is a double-edged sword. It gives you, you know, it allows you to have a more diverse workforce, but it also creates more competition, so for the workforce. So the division is planning, you know, the strategy here to try to increase this is to broaden our recruitment, have trainings to for sensitivity in the workplace. So that's what our strategy is for that.
Straight?
Yeah.
So how do you broaden recruitment? I mean, are there any specifics that you do now? Or?
Well, Representative Glizio, it's, you know, it's where you advertise, you know, making it more nationwide, advertising in Portland. You know, it's that's a hard one. I mean, it really is. It's just how much you advertise, where you put it out there on the Internet, on job pages out on the Internet. And it depends on the positions. Some positions you attract more people to them, and then others you don't, depending on the salary range and that kind of thing. So those are some of the things.
Sure. I mean, I understand that, but yeah. I guess what I'm asking specifically is what does, you know, what do you do specifically, or what do you plan to do? I mean, maybe some examples of where you advertise for positions, just to give us an idea.
Representative Glizio, well, currently what we do is we advertise on the state jobs page. There is that one. And I don't know everywhere we do, because a lot of times it's very specific to the position. Mm-hmm. So that'll make a difference where we put it on. We put it on our website. If we advertise in newspapers, you know, it just depends on the kind of position it is. We have listservs that, you know, like say for elections, there are, you know, we have for the HAVA position that we had listservs that were for NASED, and we put that out there on that, you know, so we have different listservs, professional listservs that we'll put it out on. So I think that's the best I can do.
Okay.
I can get more
specific.
No. If
I just curiosity.
Yeah.
I don't need more paper.
Okay.
I was just curious.
All right. So, yeah, it is really specific to the position a lot of the time. The other performance measure is an internal performance measure, which is our customer service rating. Since 2003, Secretary of State has done an internal survey for the internal support divisions, and we evaluate on overall timeliness, accuracy, helpfulness, expertise, and availability of information. So, and our Human Resources Division has consistently scored 90% or above in overall satisfaction. And they do this with three people. So I think that's quite an accomplishment for them. talk about human resources efficiencies. You know, so often when we talk about efficiencies, everyone tries to think of one big specific thing that you did to either reorganize or put something on the web or everything. And one of the things that I think is truly efficient is when you manage to be effective at what you need to do with minimal resources. And I think our HR division really does that. Over the course of the last biennium, just a few things that they were able to accomplish is 30 recruitments, 26 new employee orientation sessions, writing and implementing a new performance management policy, overhauling all the forms for that performance evaluation policy, training employees on how it works, providing managers with supervisors with comprehensive training on core management competencies, and holding mandatory agency-wide respectful workplace training. And this is just a few of the things they've done. And like I said, they've done this with 3 FTE. You know, so that's truly efficient in my mind. The division, and they've also done this with 98% overall customer service in the last survey that we did. So, I mean, I think that's pretty good.
Let me ask you a question about the survey.
Yeah.
So, if I were, it's absolutely anonymous, the survey.
Yes.
In other words, I'd be afraid to say something.
Representative Glizzo, yes, it is.
Okay.
It's completely anonymous.
Right.
And people are not afraid to say things when they're upset. Yeah. We've had a few hurt feelings over the years with that survey.
Well, kudos.
Yeah. So Human Resources has one program option package, and that is to reclass two positions. The first position was actually the work was done to reclass it back in March of 2006. And it went from a Human Resource Analyst 1 to a Human Resource Analyst 2. And just as a note, because this position was in the Human Resources Division, our HR director sent that over to DAS HRMSD to do the work on that. Because no conflict of interest or no anything. We wanted an outside person to do that. The second position actually was determined that it needed to be reclassed in 2001. We had a management study for the agency for management positions, and our HR director was deemed to go from a D to an E, principal exec manager D to an E. We've had it in our budget since that happened. For one reason or another, it's been pulled. I think because it had some general fund attached to it in the years. But so we're just putting it back in the budget, hoping to get the budget brought up to current with current practices. And this would be for general fund $1,272 and $9,695 of other funds to fund this package. So that's HR. Does anybody have any questions?
Can you give me those numbers again?
1,272 general fund and 9,695 other fund.
No, excuse me, Mr. Chair, and that's to fund the both positions for the biennium.
Chair Jensen, Representative Cromwell, yes. Reclasses are you know, not as expensive as new positions because you're only reclassing from the old position up, so it's a lot less expensive. Okay, I will move on to our Business Services Division. Business Services Division is responsible for our accounting functions, our budgeting, our purchasing and contracts, and then our cash management. Because of corporations taking fees, the selling of the blue books, we cashier quite a bit of money. So, and this section handles that. Budget drivers for the Business Services Division would be, examples of that would be change in statute, Elections Division final filing days, blue book sales, budget deadlines, the legislative sessions, that all drives their budget. Business Services Division has two performance measures as well. One of them is Key Performance Measure 14, and that is the percent of the purchasing and contracting staff with professional certification through the National Institute of Government Procurement, which is NIGP. And this requires the staff to take quite a bit of training and a very extensive test to get certified through the national group. Back in 2003, NIGP started tracking agencies that had 100% certification for their purchasing staff. And the Secretary of State's office, you know, was the first in Oregon to achieve this, so we're very proud of that fact. Currently, we are not at 100% because we've had turnover. And it's not a requirement to have this certification to get hired, but it is something that we strongly believe in. So we pay for training for our staff, and these two staff members that don't have it are now working towards it. So the other performance measure is, again, the internal support. An internal performance measure, and it's the customer service rating. Business Services Division has also scored consistently over the 90% range for overall satisfaction for the agency. Some efficiencies that Business Services has done over the last biennium is they have taken over the municipal audit invoicing program. This used to be handled up in audit. A staff person in audits division sent out invoices to municipalities for the program. And so in the last biennium, BSD has taken that over, and they've been able to standardize the process, creating more timely invoice activities for the municipal audits invoicing. And they've also done this by not adding any staff. They've absorbed this in their own work, in their existing staff amounts. Business Services also has begun scanning invoices in the into electronic form, and this has allowed them to retrieve the invoices in a much timelier fashion, and it saved quite a bit of time for the accounting staff. They have two program option packages. The first one is Program Option Package 141, and that is to add an additional position. This position would be a budget analyst position. The way Secretary of State is set up for their budgeting system, budgeting positions, is we have one person that's dedicated to do budgeting, and then the director is responsible for being the backup to that person. And over the years, with the adding of the Help America Vote Act and the federal requirements and tracking, and then stricter tracking to performance measures, we've just seen the need that the director isn't an effective backup to that budget person. And they need to be focusing their time on more strategic things for the agency and for the division. And so we saw a need to add a budget analyst, which this package would be funded with $139,890 of other funds. The second program option package is a reclass of two positions. The first position was an accountant 3 and was reclassed to an accountant 4. This was determined by our Human Resources Division back in July of 2006. This position is responsible for developing and preparing the agency comprehensive annual financial report, which we lovingly call the CAFR, and coordinates also the agency's annual statewide financial reporting process and serves as the team lead for the accounting group. The second position, in 2006, Business Services determined that our Purchasing and Contracts Division needed an extra person. With HAVA, that has increased quite a bit of our purchasing, and we saw a need for someone to handle the more routine purchases, also help with supplies, and making sure our inventory records were accurately managed. And so what business services did is they took a position out of our business cash management unit, the cash management section that was vacant. They took that and reclassed that to a procurement and contract specialist one. This package is funded with $2,012 of general fund and $19,507 of other funds. So that's business services. Are there any questions? Okay, great. Okay, now moving on to information systems. The budget drivers for information systems include the internet. The internet affects the division in a number of ways. There's a push towards moving more electronic government and placing more of the agency's systems online for the public to access. And with an average of more than 10,000 unique visitors each day to our website, stability and support of the internet applications is a top priority. The second budget driver would be change. The division strives to operate within a framework of sound mid-range planning, but with rapidly changing technology and trends, combined with regular programming change and legislation, both federal and state, that means change is a daily order of business. And change drives the need for emphasis in training, configuration and requirements management, as well as strong project and change management. And then the...
Senator Johnson.
What's change management?
Senator Johnson, sorry about that. Change management is, it's like a construction contract, actually. It's change management within the system. You have to document what you have, and then you have to document what you're changing so that you know to test it against the existing. And it applies to the contract if we're having a vendor do it. It applies to a system.
Why isn't that just contract management? And I don't understand the distinction you're trying to make.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, was not just the contract. It's actually the application. You have to track the changes within, like our business registry system. You have to know what your baseline is, and then you have to track the changes to requirements in the system. It's kind of a twofold system. You have to do it in both places. It's not just the contract. You're actually tracking the changes in your system, and you have to have quality control. You have testing people, and you have to verify that. Because if what your requirements are when you promote them and they don't work, you have to have this change management system track so you know where that might have broke when it didn't work. Does that make sense? No?
No.
I can tell.
It's fine. Thanks.
Sorry. The other business driver for information systems would be our business partners. Changes that they make in their processes, and that greatly affects what happens in information systems. Performance measures.
Mr. Chair.
Over. Senator Bates. I just got a quick question here. The budget for this for information systems is substantially increased over 0507. $2 million of it's coming from the federal government. Is that HABA funds?
Chair Jensen, Senator Bates, yes.
And then there's another other funds increase of about $3 million. Where do those other funds actually come from?
Chair Jensen, Senator Bates, that would be from our corporations division mainly. Those would be our program option packages that I'm going to go through. We have, I think they have 5 program option packages. There's a corporation technology pop that's $1.2 million. And that's...
Does this trace back to general fund money, or is it true other funds?
They're true other funds. They're fees.
pay fees.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry.
We finally got there.
Yeah. As a point of clarification here, any corporation fees that are not used are transferred to the general fund. So while they're not directly general fund dollars,
yes,
any dollars that are not used in the corporation's divisions, right, would be transferred to the general fund.
Correct.
Thank you. But the original source of it is not general funds.
Correct. Correct.
Thank you. Got to defend your budget. So I want to know I'm a solid ground. Okay.
Okay, so information system has two performance measures. The first one is key performance measure 15. And this is efficiencies and cost reduction. And what we track is cost of desktop support by workstation and system user. As an internal support division, it's important to track our costs to see how effective we are at providing the service that we need to be providing to our customers. And when we looked at this number, we are at $533 per workstation, which Gartner shows for government agencies in 2004-06 at 1,600 per workstation. So we are way below the Gartner average. I think one of the things that helps bring this down is we've adopted a policy for replacement of our computers that is probably more aggressive than other state agencies. Keeping very current equipment on our desktops helps bring this number down because there are fewer problems. The other performance rating...
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Kinson. Gene, does the Information System Division, did they develop ORSTAR?
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitson, yes, in partnership with our Elections Division. Our Elections Division determined the requirements and what it needed to have in it, because they are the business people. And then we hired consultants and did the programming. Yeah.
Follow up. As you're aware, my office has had some significant problems with ORSTAR, not least having the entire input for one day, what was actually done by your own staff, disappear by 2 days later. And it's never been found to our knowledge. It just went up in smoke. We're also concerned about the will this system work if you don't have high-speed dial-up? Or have we addressed any of those problems?
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsett, we are working to address those problems, yes. After I came to your office and talked to you about that, I went back to my staff and talked to them. The other thing that we're trying to work on putting together is a group of people that use the system, not Secretary of State employees, but outside your treasurers, candidates that would like to give us input on what's not working and help us to make this a better system. With all systems, there are things that go wrong. When we did the Oregon Centralized Voter Registration System, there were a lot of county clerks that weren't happy with it, and we worked through that with them. And through communicating with the people that are actually using it, finding out what their issues are, and then working with them to make it better, we make better systems that way. And so we're hoping to do that. Unfortunately, with this system, we had a really short time frame to get this done. So some of those processes didn't get done, but we're hoping to get them in place now to make it better.
Follow up, please.
Follow up.
As you know, our professional quit in frustration actually closed her business as a result of her frustration over ORSTAR. That doesn't make ORSTAR necessarily a bad system. It certainly made it incompatible with the profession that was helping us.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, when we talk about performance measures, all new systems have bugs, but this one seems to be fraught with bugs.
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsett, that's the hard part you've had bugs, but we've had other people that have said it's just wonderful and it's really great and it's really helped them. So, you know, we want to make it better, but we're getting both sides of this. So,
if I had done the input, or my wife or Treasury had done the input, I could understand that the fact that we're not computer literate would be commensurate with not getting a good outcome.
Yeah.
But in this situation, the Secretary of State staff watched over the shoulder while the ever button was pushed.
Yeah.
And yet there's still a material disappeared. And we still have not received a report as to where that material even went. Not that it's necessary, but when we look at the significant fines and the significant publicity we get from failing to comply with the system, and then when the system doesn't work, it's a major concern to not only myself but a number of others that depend on that system.
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, I do understand that, and we are trying to make it better, and we are trying to work with people so we can get input and make it better. I actually don't know what happened to that. I remember you talking to me about that, and I went back, but I don't remember what happened or if we even have an explanation of what happened. Hold on one second. Do you know? Okay. I'm going to ask John Limbach to come up here and explain that.
John Lindbeck, Director of Elections in the Secretary of State's office. Senator Whitsitt, I'm not sure I have all the exact details on your exact situation. I'd like to first sort of address the situation generally, which is what Gene just said is true, in that we've had a wide variety of reactions from end users of the system. Some who've told us that it's the best rollout of a system they've ever seen in their life, and others who have had problems. And as I indicated when I talked to you last time, we haven't seen anything so far that would result in anybody receiving penalties. What I've seen so far is everybody trying to do the right thing, including candidates, my staff, and so on. That we did expect a bit of a shakedown cruise with this, and some of the problems that we saw were not surprising, but that we seem to have ironed them out. Things have gotten smoother and smoother over time. I think we're probably within about a month to 6 weeks away from switching back to full enforcement mode here. We are not in full enforcement mode because there are people having problems, their own problems, problems that are not ours. There are still problems cropping up that are ours. There are problems cropping up that are the problems of vendors that some candidates use, and we're using a provision of the bill, House Bill 3458, that says that we're to take into account the transition from the old system to the new system as a mitigating circumstance. We're using that provision in the bill to sort of just relax, let everybody get used to this new system, let us work the bugs out before we switch into full enforcement mode here, and I think overall it's going fairly well. In terms of your exact situation, as I recall, our staff member was helping you the next day. Those transactions were indeed not showing up in the system, but that they were found. It's not that they were eventually found, is my understanding. But I can go back and double check on that.
If they were, it was not conveyed, Mr. Chair. It was not conveyed to my office or to me.
Well, we'll get back to you on that.
They were re-entered again, so that if they were found, there would be a double entry.
Yeah. Well, they may. You know.
And
the situation was dealt with, so that as far as I know, your reporting is for your particular committee is accurate and up to date. And so it has been a shakedown cruise, and it has been frustrating for some people, but it's also been a situation where some people don't seem to be having these problems. The particular treasurer that you're talking about who quit wrote a very abrupt letter to her candidate saying, I'm not doing this anymore, sort of without notice. I asked my staff to contact every single committee that person was helping and give them a sort of personal outreach and say, do you need any help? As far as I know, every single committee was contacted. Some have asked for help, some have not. I contacted one person myself. So where we hear problems, we're taking as aggressive a posture as possible to try and go out and solve them and get everybody through this transition period, and we think it's overall going well.
Follow up.
I want to be clear that your staff has been extremely helpful. The system appears to have a bug in it. The other question that I ask, will it work if you don't have access to high-speed internet? Now, for instance, I live about 20 miles east of Klamath Falls, and the phone line that runs up to my farmhouse is archaic, and it will stay that way because Quest is required to have voice capability, not high-speed internet capability. So my concern is that for those of us who live in rural areas, will the system even work for us when it becomes mandatory?
Senator, my understanding is that it will. It will be slower depending on the quality of your dial-up connection. It will not be as fast as high-speed internet. Nothing ever is, but that it will. Now, If you have some sort of serious problem with your connectivity, we will work with you on that and see if there are things that can be done to help you speed that up. I mean, we've done that with several end users who have run into problems with their own firewalls, for example, and where they've questioned whether or not it's us, whether it's our system, or whether it's them. And what we found is that people in their own personal computer networks, particularly if they're in business, they have a lot of specialized firewalls, that kind of thing, that if we get our technical people to talk to their technical people, we can sort of assist in that situation. But that will be a concern for us if it is not fast enough for dial-up connectivity. And so we would like to work with you on that if you get home and discover that that is a problem.
I'm sure you will. One further question, please.
Further question.
That just jumped right out of my mind.
Oh. I might observe, Senator, the system does work on telephone line dial-up since when I used it, I had yet to transition to a high-speed internet of any sort. So, it does work. And it's not terribly slow, but the system seems to work. The only problem I have with it is it's a system that doesn't understand negative numbers. And
and fix them for you.
Yeah.
Thank you for covering me while I got through my senior moment there. The other question had to do with it's my understanding that it is not legal for us to use the computers in our office or other government-owned computers to do election accounting. Is that correct?
Our office has jurisdiction only over what people do on their what public employees do, and that's non-elected public employees do on their business time. We do not have jurisdiction over policies related to personal use of computers and that kind of thing. And when people ask us questions like that, we refer them to the administration of their department. In this case, it would be your Dave Henderson Schaap about what the policies would be for the legislature on use of computers.
Have you asked Dave Henderson?
Can I ask Dave Henderson? Sure.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates.
Since we're on the, this is really a topic for the Elections Division, but since we're there, I just got to ask the question that's in my mind all the time. Some of us very reluctantly voted for the changes in reporting. I mean, very reluctantly. I mean, you can't hardly vote against, you know, that kind of reform. But I'm concerned we've built in, or asked you to build, a Byzantine system that is going to be very, very difficult for people to comply with. I've just given up. I've turned it all over to my professional staff and hope to God they don't make a mistake that I end up going to jail for. Okay? My question to you is, now that you've got this sort of rolling out, a little feel for it, are people really able to understand and comply, or have most of us just given up and turned it over to somebody else? I mean, what's your sense of what's going out there in the real world? I think what the good senator to my right just gone through is, I'm afraid it's going to keep happening. Not so much the system breaking down, it's people just can't keep track of all these dates and times and, you know, what they did and what they didn't do. It's just got to be as possible.
Well, Senator Bates, thank you for that question. I think that when you look at the bill that was passed 2 years ago, it can look intimidating when you consider the fact that every transaction now has a deadline of its own, rather than, you know, we basically threw out that old concept of your reports where you reported all your activity between date X and date Y, and then that report was due by date C. That got thrown out the window, and now every individual transaction has its own deadline, 30 days from the date that occurs until 6 weeks out from an election, and then it's 7 days. Or if you're in the middle of a legislative session and you're accepting contributions, you fall under that 2-day deadline for contributions during a legislative session. The system is built, and we've gotten a lot of compliments on it, so that it calculates the deadline for you. So when you enter a transaction and you say, let's say that I gave you $500 today, and you or your staff person, your campaign person, entered that, the system tells you what date that's due based on the date that you received the check. And then it asks you whether you, once you've completed all the required information, whether or not you want to file it now with the Secretary of State, or you want to file it on the date that it's due. And you can make a choice. And so it's built to sort of make that calculation of the deadline as easy as possible, because the system does it for you. And so, I mean, we've had reactions like yours, which is, it just looks too complicated now. I can tell you, since day one, when I walked into this job in 2001, I've had people carping at me about how our campaign finance system is too complicated. It's always been complicated. They thought the old system was complicated and complained about that. When I walk into any committee room as the chief administrator for campaign finance, I never feel the love, so to speak.
It's not your fault. I mean, everyone passed the bill. We passed the bill.
Yeah.
Just trying to comply with it.
Yeah. So I really think that once people get used to this, they will find this simpler than the old one.
Okay.
For a whole variety of reasons.
Your sense is it's actually a better, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind. You sense it actually is a better system.
Yes, and I think the legislature's decision 2 years ago was a wise one. I think other states will be following this.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The chair respectfully disagreed. and is always hesitant to fix something that seems to be working. But sometimes we're in a minority and in a process that we live in, why we live with that, or we don't. And
205, you weren't in my area.
I was.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cromwell.
As a member that, if my recollection serves me correctly, I think I did actually vote against the bill. But my question is that when John, you mentioned that it automatically calculates the date. So actually, and the system also, if I'm not mistaken, does allow you to report early. So there's no longer this date range, other than it has to be done within, I think it's 30 days of the transaction. So theoretically, you could a person could say every month on, say, for example, the 29th or the 30th, they're going to do their transactions, they're going to do their report and send it all at one time, and they would be within that. Am I correct in that?
That's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And the new bill really didn't require anything extra in regards to reporting except for some occupational information. That was it. You're not reporting any more information really now than you were before. You're just expected to do it within these new time frames. And it's the same amount of information. My guess is that as you get closer to campaigns and you get closer to elections, you're going to appreciate the fact that you've already reported a bunch of stuff, because you're going to have less stuff to report at the end. That crunch time at the end is going to seem like less of a burden. I mean, I may be wrong, but I think that may be what you find.
One more and we move on.
Thank you, Chair Kensel. This is probably more of a policy question, but how did you arrive at 2 days to make a bank deposit of a campaign contribution? For those of us who don't live two blocks from a bank, that can be severe. I mean, the fact that I live 20 miles away doesn't, you know, that's not impossible. There are other folks that live a great deal further from a bank than that, and you spend all your time running. You or someone spends all your time running back and forth to make deposits.
You know, Senator Whitson, I don't know the answer to that question. That law was in place before I got here, and I wasn't here for that debate. I'm sorry, I can't.
More appropriate question, and seems to me on this, is why do you have something that it is absolute and totally impossible to ever enforce or prove? How can, unless all of my contributors are sending via certified mail, how can you know when I get a check in the mail?
Don't give them any ideas. Don't do that to me.
And remember, Senator, it has to come through this body.
Thank you. I think my wife had me one that was 2 months old. What do you do? I said, you turn it back into him now.
Well, you even ding for that if you on this sort of thing, because you haven't refunded it.
Oh, I did.
Oh,
yeah, I did. Where's that been?
I would. I keep in my home file a letter that came from Kennewick, having nothing to do with campaign, which is about 60 miles from my home, or less. It took in fact a little over 2 months for it to get there from the time it was first postmarked. It went via more cities than I could possibly remember without looking at it before it finally arrived and covered that 60-mile thing. So I've got some documentation in case I get into trouble.
Got a passport, see what I got.
Okay. Let's get off of the elections and get on to something we can do something about.
John, are you feeling a lot now?
I mean, we know that the solution to the election, you know, problem is just to, take the red pen and mark out the dollars so we have the opportunity to work on that a little bit later. We'll get to work later. Please proceed.
Okay. All right. So the other internal support measure for Information Systems Division is customer service. And this division has maintained above about the 85% target. And I think this conversation we just had is probably why it's a little lower than the other internal support divisions. You know, people have a love-hate relationship with their IS division, is what I've found. But the division does have a goal to make that 90%, and they're going to try to do this through increased customer contact and communication. Some of the efficiencies that they have planned in the...
Senator Johnson.
How? Increased customer communication.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, some of the things that we've seen is giving project updates to staff so they know what's going on, giving them more notice if we have to work on our systems or if email's down or whatever, just an effective communication tool to our customers so they know what's going on. Okay, some of the efficiencies that they have planned. The Information Systems Division is looking at some help desk software for our help desk staff. Right now we do have a system in place. It's not a very good reporting system. It doesn't give us good reporting method reports. So that we know where some of the trouble spots are, it's hard to track ticket items, calls into the help desk. So they're looking at getting some that will be a little bit more effective. The other thing they're looking at, and they're hoping that this software will be able to do both, and that is help desk and then issue tracking, which is in our application development side of the division, to track issues when we're developing software.
Sure.
Yes.
Gene, with regards to the help desk, now a lot of the other agencies are already using help desk types of software. So are you looking at what's already being used and trying to tag on to that, or are you looking at, are you going to reinvent the wheel? I guess is what I'm asking here. And if you're going to reinvent the wheel, are you going to build it yourself, or is it going to be a commercial off-the-shelf type of system that then is adapted to your needs? How's that going to work?
Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell, yes, we are working with the other agencies. Our CIO sits on the CIO Council, so she's aware of what's going on out there, and we're looking at those applications that are out there, and there is no way that we want to develop this ourselves. We would like, the help desk is a pretty much a standard software package, and really the fine difference between them is what kind of reports can you get out of them, and that's where most softwares fail. They store data great, but they don't always give you very good reports to manage your applications by. So that's one of the things that we're looking at, is what kind of reports can we get to help be more effective in our management.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. Okay, so program option packages for information systems. They have 5 program option packages. One of the reasons for having so many program option packages is all the technology initiatives that the program divisions have, we put in our information systems division. They manage those projects. So, and then there also is, the first one is POP 171, which is requesting 2 limited duration positions to be made permanent. Last biennium, we were here before our committee asking for 3 positions. One was a security officer, a developer, and a testing requirements manager. And we received these as limited duration positions. We then were able to take a position that was vacant and reclass it and finance it through permanent financing to make the security officer permanent. But we didn't have those resources to do that for the developer and the testing requirements manager.
Now, run that by me again. How you manipulated around the legislature's creating of a permanent position.
Chair Jensen, it's pretty standard practice to be able to take positions that you have. So how the process works. Hopefully I can explain this correctly. We had a vacant position. We looked at our operations. Do we need to go out and recruit that, or do we have other needs for that position? Because the security officer we deemed as very important, we decided instead of coming back and trying to ask for that, we decided to use our financial resources to reclass that position and pay for it through permanent financing. In reality, permanent financing is a more expensive way for agencies to fund reclasses. And it's very complicated. Do you really want me to try to explain it? Maybe Darren could explain it better. It's kind of a complicated process.
I understand that. One of the reasons that I asked the question. It's also one of the things that frequently gives some of us as legislators a little bit of heartburn when we encounter vacant positions, you know, being another position being shifted over to that. But now we'll proceed on.
Actually, Mr. Chair,
okay.
I would like the explanation. I know it's complicated, and
okay.
I know we're not the brightest bulbs on the
string. Oh, no, I wasn't implying that at all.
Why don't you give a run at it?
I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to do it. It was no. So, Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, what you do is when you refinance through permanent financing, and please, Darren, jump in and help me if you want to here.
What is permanent financing?
Actually, though, I'd like the agency to explain it, Mr. Chair. And I'm picking on you because
okay.
This is a practice that is used throughout state government.
Mm-hmm.
You're the ones doing it, and if you can't explain it to us, that's an issue.
I can explain it.
Okay.
Okay, so you take the position that you're reclassing, and you basically take the top step of that position. And then you take the, so it's at the current step, and you take the very top step, and then you take the new position and take it at the top step, and that's how much it cost to finance that. What we were able to do is we took a vacant position. We actually had two vacant positions, if I remember right now. So we took one position and eliminated it. So then you take the top step of the eliminated position, and that's your financing. That's how much you have to finance it. So for a biennium, so you biennialize that top step. Then you take the position that you have vacant that you're reclassing and do top step biennialized, and the new position and how much that costs and biennialize, and the difference is how much it costs to finance that reclass. So, I mean, you have to be able to work within your existing resources. So we took a position and eliminated it and then took another vacant position and reclassed it. Did I make sense there?
Oh, yeah.
It's easier for me sometimes if I have the spreadsheet in front of me to visualize it, but...
Go ahead, Tanner.
Well, and then I'm not saying this is applicable to you, but then the next biennium you come in and ask for three new positions. I mean, we shouldn't kid ourselves about what these reclasses by burning positions,
mm-hmm.
as it's referred to affectionately in
mm-hmm.
agency lingo, burning positions, and then coming back in and asking for additional positions once the vacancies are dealt with. How many vacancies do you have right now?
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, I don't know right off the top of my head. I can get that for you. And can I address the coming in for new positions? You know, that's not our practice. I can't speak for other agencies. I know that.
To you. I'm just saying it's a common phenomenon.
We do have that situation where we did do some permanent financing and do some reclasses and eliminate positions in the corporations division and then realize we did that too soon. And I think Peter did request some positions, and that was for the privacy, you know, redacting, and that was one of the things that he had eliminated positions that were vacant, and then now we realize that he had done that too soon. We try not to do that. I realize that that probably is a practice that does happen, though. We were actually trying to be good stewards of our resources so that we could make a position that we saw as something we needed permanent without coming to you for more positions. That was our intent.
Is there any possibility that the reason that they weren't permanent in the first place was the legislature didn't feel that there was a justifiable cause to make them permanent and wanted maybe some history or something of that nature before they made the, created the permanent positions?
Chair Jensen, good point. That our committee didn't make that, that wasn't what they said last time. They said, we see the need for this, but we want you to have them as limited duration and see, and then you can come back and ask for them again.
A couple of things I'd like to follow up with. So last year, our last session, they were made limited durations with the proviso that you'd come back in and seek legislative authority to make them permanent. But instead, you refinanced them permanently inside.
No, just one.
Just one?
Just one of them. We only had the resources to do one. We took two positions and made one, basically.
What about the part about coming back to the legislature to see if the limited durations could be made full-time?
That's what this POP is about. I was just giving you some history about what we did, is that we would have been here with three if we hadn't found a way, and we would still have those other two positions in our budget.
Not if my bill goes through, you wouldn't.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Oh.
Yeah, just a rookie ways and means, I don't know, observation. I feel like I'm in a dilemma that this reminds me of. There was a story where a student who had a water bottle. They had an exam, and they took a water bottle, and they wrote the what they thought were all the exam answers to the exams, formulas for chemistry, on the inside label of the water bottle, because you can write really small, but then when water is in the bottle, it magnifies and increases the size of the font. So when they had the water bottle sitting on the, and so part of me had, you know, kind of grudging respect for the ingenuity and the critical thinking faculties of the student, and you almost want to reward that. So at the other level, you're thinking, well, that's really not how it's supposed to work. So as a rookie listening to this, I have respect for, I mean, we're always talking about, well, the private sector is so nimble and they make do with limited resources. And at one level, it sounds to me like this is doing just that. This is trying to find a creative way to provide the services and the functions of the Secretary of State's office when budget times are tough. So it's just an observation. So
I would suggest representative, that for the student, you give them an A for ingenuity and an F for chemistry 104. Okay. Unless there are other questions on this, we'll move on.
All right. The next program option package is our corporation technology package. This is continued projects that we have been working on for the Corporations Division to continue the e-business projects implemented over prior bienniums. So this includes the next phases of our central business registry. It also includes the notary database rewrite. This is on an old Oracle platform, and it has been in need to be rewritten for a number of years. A digital image records management system for business registry, trademark and service mark database and images viewable online, and business registration certificates online, and electronic check e-payment enhancements. This package is funded with $1,200,000 of other funds, $200,000 of other funds, and that is coming from the Corporations Division. The next program option package is the elections business system. This is the system that ORSTARS is part of, and what this package will do is set to do other modules within the system, and it's also supposed to add functionality to the campaign finance and the committee registration modules. The other modules it's going to be working on is candidate filing, complaints and violations, and initiative and referendum. And this package is funded with $1,920,000 of federal funds. The next package is package 174, which is the Business Services Division point of sale system. Like I said, Business Services is responsible for doing all the cashiering in the agency. Currently, we have staff that use a cash register and do counter transactions. So our business registry, if you come in and file a business registry, we have staff that takes transactions, rings in a cash register. At the end of the day, they tally that register, balance it, send the money over to Business Services, and they rekey it. Same with Elections Division for anything paid in their office, Archives Division for anything they buy at the Archive Center, Blue Books, etc. What this system is this will create a computerized system that lets them ring the transaction, and it automatically goes into our cashiering system. So that's what this is for, and it is $85,000 for of other funds. And then our final package is the Electronics Records Management System. This is for the Archives Division and actually for the agency as a whole. What this do will ultimately, we will be able to store and retrieve our documents, and I'm losing track here. Sorry about that. You've asked me so many questions. So the first phase will be to implement the electronics records management system within the Secretary of State's office, which will allow each user of the Secretary's computer network to automatically file and assign retention to each public records, including emails, which will allow the agency to better manage their electronic storage needs and to lower risk of inaccurately storing the data. As Mary Beth talked to you on Monday, the second phase of this, which would be in the 2009-11 biennium, would be to set up a state electronic record center. So, and this package is funded with $1,500,000 of other funds. And that concludes Information Systems Division. Does anyone have any questions?
Okay. Looks like you're free to leave before
right.
Somebody comes along with
okay. I think John Lindbeck is going to...
You picked a good time. Representative Crummell.
All right.
You want to hear from John Lindbeck?
Okay. Good morning again, John, for the record.
Good morning. John Lindbeck, Director of Elections in the Secretary of State's office. Let me get all my assorted sheets of paper out here. My glasses, the all-important glasses. Okay. I didn't quite get through everything the last time I visited with you. As I recall, I should pick up talking about our performance measures for the Elections Division and our POPs. Is that where? Is that okay? Okay. So I'd like to talk to you about our performance measures. Our performance measure, you can see in the documentation on the voters pamphlet I'd like to cover first. You can see that we finished on target for our cost per page. I'd like to address this issue just briefly, though. This is a performance measure that I have conflicted feelings about. It's good that we're able to keep the cost per page down to the lowest possible dollar, given the circumstances. That's very good in a budget room like this one, but I don't believe that that's necessarily the best thing for the voters. What we have, I believe, in my professional judgment, is a voter's pamphlet that many
that many voters tell me is difficult to read.
I would make the observation you're probably in violation of the American Disabilities Act on the size font.
Well, I would love to increase the font.
I
would
love to. I understand what it does.
And I will tell you that in my professional judgment, I can't think of a booklet in Oregon state government that needs a redesign more than the state voters pamphlet to make it more voter friendly. And it goes from font size to more white space to make it just easier to navigate. I talk to a lot of groups and I make it a practice. And, you know, I really suggest that you do the same if you think of it next time you're having a town meeting. Just ask people what they think of the voters pamphlet. And the answer I get back most often is that they read it, or they claim they read it, but they will also tell you that they don't read all of it and that it's too big and it's too hard to navigate. And, for example, they don't read all the measure arguments. They just read who submitted them is a good example. And we spend a whole lot of money to print those measure arguments.
Is there a way to actually, John, now that your office is moving so much towards electronics, and I know there'll be people that'll cry foul right away, but just try the idea out, that you actually would summarize who had submitted arguments for and against and drive people to a computer to see the whole text of the arguments, and that you just have the fors and against?
We could try that. We have tried with various alternative formats, particularly for voters with disabilities, on the voters pamphlet, you know, using some of our HAVA funds to work on those kinds of issues. What really needs to happen, and I actually have a redesign. I have a proposed redesign for the voters pamphlet that I've had in my office for 4 years. I've been afraid to bring it out because the budget situation was so bad here for my first two election cycles that I would have been left out of the room. Because what happens when you start redesigning things and making larger fonts and increasing the number of pages, that it makes a more expensive book. You can't help it. But I'd really love one of these years to be able to redesign that booklet, and I don't know how I can possibly do it given the budget constraints and sort of how the thing is funded and the sort of dynamics at work in trying to get that done. I don't know how to deal with it.
How much HAVA money do you have left over? As I recall, having had a brief association with HAVA, there was quite a bit.
There is a lot of HAVA money, but there are restrictions on how you spend HAVA money, particularly on stuff you were doing prior to HAVA coming along. I could pay money, use HAVA money to pay for, just say, design services for somebody to come up with a new design. But I could not use HAVA money to actually help pay for production and distribution of the voters pamphlet because we were doing that prior to HAVA. You're not allowed under federal rules to what they call backfill. So that wouldn't survive a federal audit. And the fact of the matter is it would make a much more expensive booklet, but I think it's something that if we want to have the most effective voters pamphlet for the voters, for the candidates, for the people that buy measure arguments, something that is really thoroughly read and understood and sort of respected, it really badly needs a redesign. And I didn't come in, I didn't ask for it, and it's just because it just seems politically hopeless to go down that road.
Mr. Chair, I recall listening to the Secretary testify, I think with justifiable pride, at a time when the voters pamphlet was actually on the chopping block, about all of the cost-saving measures that you had put in place, the weight of the paper, the margins, the type, the font. I mean, you guys had scoured the landscape. One of the things that has historically been rejected as a bar to participation is increased fees. There are some that think that this is the best advertising bargain on the face of the planet. And I don't know whether or not there would be a mechanism to begin a public information campaign about you get more if you pay a little bit more. this has been seen as a free service, almost an entitlement to Oregon voters, but whether or not there's a mechanism to charge more for the statewide offices, sorry, Mr. Secretary. but to charge a lot more.
Charge more.
And to begin to generate enough additional revenue to implement some of the user-friendly design elements that you're talking about. I think it would take an education piece as a rollout, but it's a deal.
Senator Johnson, for the past two legislative sessions, not this one, had bills in to increase the fees under the umbrella of the discussion about there's no money. How are we going to keep paying for this thing? Not just a redesign. We had a lot of trouble getting serious consideration of that bill. A lot of trouble.
Okay.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, pretty quick. Are there any restrictions if there were, let's say, a pilot project where people who voluntarily, and maybe this would just be more work and be a disaster, but who wanted an electronic copy of the entire thing, just shot you an email and said, I don't want the paper copy, it would be kind of a self-selected, or would that just be a disaster?
Well, right now, the cheapest possible way for us to distribute that pamphlet is one per every household. We don't put your name and address on it. It's just to your household. And to the extent that we get into a system where we're delivering it to specific people rather than just households and not to others, that would actually drive up the cost. We've looked at those kinds of alternatives in the past, and nothing seems to be a better deal than sending, a whole bunch of stuff out to every single household.
Could I offer one thought? We mentioned the ADA and the font size, and I understand what it would do to the size of the voter's pamphlet. Would it be possible to... the voter's pamphlet is available online, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, would it be possible then to include in there a little bit of plug for somebody going online if they are affected by the font size?
Mm-hmm.
Further suggesting that places like the local library will have the technology even if they don't have. And then, rather than complicate the world and make the people have to increase the font size with the computer to have a larger font size, and that you could do electronic or, with the computer thing without having to do anything else. It strikes me. Because a lot of complaints that I get, as you have already indicated, is I can't read it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not readable for me. And believe me, the folks out in the Thule's, where I come from, read the voter's pamphlet religiously. And they could care less about anything else you do as a candidate. It's all what comes out in the voter's pamphlet. Sort of thing. So, I talk to a lot of seniors, mainly because I feel very comfortable, with seniors now. I talk to a lot of seniors, and they are very concerned about it. They want desperately to stay at a part of the election process. They want to vote, but they also, interestingly, want to be an informed voter. And that's the one source of information they have that they feel will provide them, to be an informed voter. They know that everything else is all political and careless about those ads type of thing. So, that's just one suggestion. I applaud you for the voter's pamphlet. I think it's great, and I know change to it is going to be expensive and costly, and you got to fight with us in order to get the money to do that. But there may be some things if we all think collectively that, you know, and I know you work on that, and I appreciate that and respect you, you know, for what you're doing with it. So,
thank you.
Senator Bates.
Just a quick comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, of all the things your office does, I think running elections and getting an informed public is the most important by far. It's the basis of our entire government.
Yeah.
And this state's done a good job in that. Vote by mail, all the things we talk about. But I think one of the weak links is the voter's pamphlet. It's something we all depend on. And if you, you know, you're assumed the presidency of your association this year.
Right.
Uh-huh. I remember hearing that. You know what other states are doing with their voter's pamphlet. You're in a unique position to look at the voter's pamphlet. And this is not a policy commission. This is a Ways and Means Commission. So we probably are not in our purview to tell you, bring us up right now. But I would encourage you to bring to a policy committee the changes you think are appropriate for that pamphlet, and build into it the things that Senator Johnson has suggested for fees for funding it. I can't imagine a better way to spend money. I mean, an informed public is the basis of our democracy. Without it, we're in trouble. And I think in some ways we are getting in more and more trouble with people not being properly informed. And they do depend on the voter's pamphlet. And I think it's a great place to go. So I would encourage you to bring it either this session or next session to a policy commission. And it'll come to us ultimately. But I can't think of a better thing that you could do to make this a better state as far as elections are concerned. I encourage you to not be afraid to take that out of your top drawer and bring it to us. Okay? And I will tell you, we won't always feel the love, but you might get some for this one. People recognize there's a problem.
Well, Senator Bates, that's really great to hear, and
I'll sign on the bill.
What committee do you chair? Maybe
that's
the committee to take it. Yeah. It's a health-related issue.
It's more than your doctor, you know.
Well, thank you. I mean, one of the reasons that I just wanted to have this sort of honestly say what I think about this is that I was hopeful to hear some feedback like that. Because if people are encouraging and want me to do it, I'm willing to do it. But so far it seems like it's more of a kamikaze mission, but if you don't think so, I'd be happy to give it a try.
I don't believe it's a kamikaze mission. I think there is, depending upon the nature of the economy and various things at the time, possibility that it might not be able to fly in one session. We all understand that. But I think it's something that I, too, would encourage you to do, because I believe it is fundamental to our system, to our way of life. Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly support updating it, or I support it. I think it does serve a very valuable purpose. But I also have concerns that people take this, the information in there, as, you know, the Bible, and because there's a lot of stuff that's printed in that isn't, I mean, you don't verify it, that anybody who wants to pay can put something in there. So I have a little bit of concern about some of the value of it. And when we say that it, you know, it's, it keeps people informed, sometimes I think it can misinform too. So that's just something I wanted to add to the record.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You represent. Please.
Okay. So that...
We got 4 minutes for you to wrap up.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
It's going to ring for us.
Okay. I only have two other performance measures. The other one is a customer service performance measure that's easy to talk about because it's dependent on a customer survey that we haven't done yet. But I'm very excited about doing one. And we have set targets. And we are going to do one in this biennium, and I'm particularly interested in doing one on the voter's pamphlet, sending out cards so that we finally have some real data, because we all
talk about the voter's pamphlet without any real data. Our third performance measure is about compliance with HAVA, and our goal is to be 100% compliant. We are 100% compliant now, our goal is to continue to be 100%, and sort of one of the biggest challenges to that I addressed earlier will be implementing our new HTML ballot for voters with disabilities to stay within 100% compliance of HAVA.
I don't see the HAVA one.
No, I don't either.
That's on page 40 of your of the.
Problem. I didn't go back. Oh, that's under report.
Okay. That's the one I'm looking at. There may be a reference to it earlier as well. My POPs, I can go quickly through the POPs. POP 161 is voters pamphlet funding. Right now, what we're proposing is that the money for the voters pamphlet go back into our budget. For the past cycle, it's been part of the e-board's budget, and we think that it would be more an accurate reflection on our budget to make it part of ours. Plus, it's also caused a problem for us.
Sorry, I just didn't hear you, that it was part for the last cycle, so it has been part of what?
The e-board. There was money given to the e-board, and
right.
Then we came to the e-board and asked for it.
Right.
And we'd like to move that back into our budget. Basically, my division is asked to front huge amounts of money for this thing, and it really did put us in some difficult positions a couple times. And POP 163 is an elections position. It's an office specialist position. We've had temporaries for 10 years working as office specialists, and we think that that we've shown a justification that this is something we need. And they're the kind of people that do all the photocopying of all the reports and things that people want help with other...
Anymore with the electronic...
I'm sorry?
Couldn't need those anymore with the electronic...
Well, they don't photocopy just C&E. I mean, it's tons of stuff. We're a paper mill.
It's good electronic.
The third one is the Help America Vote Act POP, which is extensive, but will fund both our, for the coming 2 years, all our efforts to comply with the Help America Vote Act. It does take temporary duration positions and make them permanent, a couple of them, and continues our programs that... serve both voters with disabilities and counties, including our distribution of money for new tally systems for county elections offices.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
How much longer does the Help America Vote Act money hold out?
Well, for us, quite a long time, because we've been very lucky in Oregon. We did not have the problem that other states had, where they had to spend all their money on polling place voting machines. Which was an enormous expenditure for these other states, and then they had to come behind and fund a centralized voter registration system. And so what we've done is we've kept money in our elections fund to help us pay for maintenance of our centralized voter registration system well into the future, and I think our current projections show that without any new HAVA funds, that money should last like three or four more bienniums before we're facing a situation where we'd need to convert to general funds for some of those expenses. But there is talk in Congress about third-year funding, which was never funded under HAVA, that they will come forward with that, which would mean another $8 or $9 million for Oregon. A new HAVA bill that would probably have new requirements and new funding with it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And Senator Page. One last quick question. Did you ever hear back from AG's office about the county situation with ONC funds going down and who's responsible for running elections there?
ORS 246-200 says only a county... county clerk can conduct an election. This is not addressed in the Constitution. It's statutory. There's a couple of other statutes that give specific authorization to only the county clerk to do specific tasks with regards to elections. And so there is a statutory issue. We didn't pay for full-fledged advice on this issue because it's so widespread and touches on a lot of agencies. But it was there was a consensus that there isn't anything right now that would allow a county to explicitly allow a county to dissolve. But they could potentially, either do some sort of merger or work with another county and pay that other county to conduct elections for them. Was some of the speculation, but there needed to be more discussion on that.
Interesting topic. Thank you.
We are